are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Thursday, January 5th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Michael Walzer, editor emeritus at Dissent Magazine, on the historical task of the left. Also on the program today, New York City crime rate drops to its lowest recorded level ever. That's 3 years after stopping Stop and Frisk. Democratic Governor Roy Cooper, North Carolina, his last ditch Hail Mary on Medicaid expansion. And Trump may or may not cut the CIA budget because they're biased. And Russians may or may not have hacked Podesta's emails, among others. As we speak, the Senate holds two different hearings, one behind closed doors, one presumably behind open doors, on Russian hackery. Meanwhile, the Republican Party begins its long descent into madness as it begins to roll back the Affordable Care Act. And Republican Michigan governor begs Trump to save his Obamacare, or at least that in the state. Attorney General nominee Jeff Sessions apparently fibbing to the Senate nomination hearings about his civil rights work. Mitch McConnell gets into the gaslighting business. And the Republicans introduce a bill which threatens to cut security funds for embassies because Benghazi. All that and more on today's program. We having a problem with the YouTube sound?
Yeah, so we switched out those cables yesterday.
Right. Didn't you test it?
I tested it and it was working and now it's not working. So
why don't you switch back to those other cables?
Do you know where those...
I don't know. Where did you put them? I have a feeling they're probably right on the ground.
You put the cables somewhere. You did it. You put them right on the ground, you little bastard.
They're right on the ground.
No. Are they literally on the ground?
Yes, probably.
Where did you drop them after you unplugged them from the thing?
Matt actually just chucked them out of the window.
So neither one of those cables are working? Is that it? There's no sound coming through. Didn't you test it yesterday? A software thing. Why would it be a software thing? Oh, look it. There's the cables. They're still dangling from the... You probably don't have the green one plugged in.
It's Russia. I blame the Russians.
Is it possible that you plugged them into... Here we go, folks.
Blame the Russians.
So on YouTube, I'm trying to mouth...
I think you're doing a good job.
I'm trying to mouth to YouTube that the sound is coming.
You know what I actually do enjoy? If you ever look at the chat when we have a tech problem, and you would think that our fans on YouTube are like relying on us for like a leukemia treatment. Like the level of like, there is no sound. What is happening?
It's actually losing the sound.
It makes
on
me
want to
lose the sound
on the audio stream. Much bigger problem.
Well, that's why you're so sort of shocking. I just want to compliment you so far on this. I feel like the calmest you've responded to a tech problem.
Well, I mean,
I think,
you know,
maybe there's some mental growth and emotional growth in 17.
No. I think I'm just too tired today. That's all.
I don't have the energy for a tantrum.
Too tired.
I'm too beat up.
Got this email. Leading Democrat education reformer urges support for Betsy DeVos nomination.
Who is the? It's not. What is it? Ree?
No.
Is it someone that we've never even heard of?
It's Kevin P. Chavos.
I've never heard of Kevin P. Chavos.
He's the American Federation for Children's Kevin P. Chavos, and there is no doubt in my mind that he's a former councilman for the District of Cumberland, and he's one of the leading education reformers in the country. I have no doubt in my mind that he's a horrible. He's always been bad for education.
I also have no one.
And here's the other giveaway. Leading Democrat.
Yeah.
I guess maybe it's not the Democrat Party education reformer.
Sounds like a great guy, though.
Are we good? Sound good. On YouTube? We switch back to the old cable?
We restarted the box.
There was no
sound.
All right. Sorry there was no sound for you folks on YouTube, but we are back. And you know what? Let's just hear as a little present for you. Chuck Schumer was on Rachel Maddow's program the other day and saying that he did not expect Donald Trump to have the ability to nominate someone that Democrats could do anything but block. Now, you recall several years ago, Harry Reid and the Democrats finally got rid of the filibuster for judicial nominees that were not Supreme Court nominees and for cabinet appointments. Executive branch appointments executive branch appointments because of the incredible obstruction by Republicans. I mean, do I even need to say the incredible obstruction? That is, everyone knows that. But Mitch McConnell, and understand, and you know, we're going to talk about these stories of all these Republican voters who they hate Obamacare, but they don't feel so badly about the Affordable Care Act. And about how they're convinced that Donald Trump is a great businessman. He would never leave us without health insurance and whatnot. So understand, to your ears and to my ears, what Mitch McConnell is about to say is going to be literally absurd. But for a huge swath of the American public, this is going to sound completely reasonable and not totally insane. So McConnell has this is what we called in the radio business, a twofer. People call it outside the radio business today. But he's one, being able to speak to his rubes, and two, being able to gaslight the rest of us. Here it is.
Let me also just point out.
I don't know if we're going to play every Republican on two times speed.
He sounds better that way.
I noticed my counterpart, Senator Schumer, announced yesterday that their goal was to apparently never fill the Supreme Court vacancy. That's kind of an expansion of the Biden rule. You recall the Biden rule in 1992 was the Senate would not confirm a Supreme Court nominee in the middle of a presidential election year, which was my view last year. Senator Schumer said in the second Bush administration that they would not confirm a Supreme Court nominee in the last 18 months of President Bush 43's tenure. Apparently, there's yet a new standard now, which is to not confirm a Supreme Court nominee at all. I think that's something the American people simply will not tolerate, and we'll be looking forward to receiving a Supreme Court nomination and moving forward on it.
Now, first off, McConnell, the Biden rule, simply BS. And Schumer's saying that we're not going to approve of a Supreme Court nomination in 18 months. Simply BS. Just historically not factual. But Mitch McConnell needs an excuse for his theft of the pick that should have been Merrick Garland, and pretends that nobody knows this, because a huge percentage of the people who actually care about what Republicans have to say don't know this. So, I don't know.
And it's not like he's going to be really vigorously called out.
Oh, they're going to bring him on Fox and Friends and really hand it to him.
Oh, no, let alone, I mean, you know, meet the press. They're not going to really hand it to him.
Last night, I had Swedish meatballs.
TMI.
And spinach, like a creamed spinach, and mashed potatoes. Wow, that sounds like a pretty fancy meal, Sam. How'd you do that?
You still having Matt come over and cook for you?
Yeah, Matt came over and he cooked for me.
Oh,
but
my God.
He's so great. Now, he's a millennial. If it's not like in like cereal in a box, he's not going to get close to it. Because
what other form does cereal come in?
Well, no, I'm saying that's the only way he will serve or eat.
Oh,
anything.
I see. Got it.
That is actually true.
It is true. But I'm not lying about that meal. And where did that meal come from? Blue Apron. Their seafood is sourced sustainably under standards developed in partnership with the Monterey Aquarium Seafood Watch. I think we get two meals a week, and I didn't see, but I think it's a cod is for tonight. Beef is raised humanely. Chickens are free range. Pork is raised naturally. Regenerative farming practices are used for produce. Blue Apron can be delivered to 99% of the continental U.S. and 99.5% of deserts, I should say. We don't get dessert. That's best. Saul had that cookie last night that I was thinking about yesterday. Anyways, but that's not even the point. Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient required for recipe. They are reducing food waste. Basically what happens, I'll tell you exactly, this is what happens every night. We have a little of something left over. I tell myself like, okay, you've had your portion. You've had half of Saul's portion, which is always that's the way I work it. That's why
it's just called your portion.
Fathers of young children get a little put on a little bit. And then what happens is I take the extra food, not much, because we barely have any extra. And it's just because Saul's, you know, not eating a quarter of what he's supposed to eat. I bring it into the kitchen. And then 5 minutes later, I eat the rest of it right there in the kitchen. It's delicious. Seared pork chops with farro cranberry chutney available in January. Spaghetti squash marinara with mushrooms and garlic knots coming in January. Spicy shrimp and Korean rice cakes with cabbage and furikake. I don't know what that furikake is, but I'm looking forward to it. This one, actually, the Korean rice cakes I've started to like obsess about now. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/majority. You're going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/majority. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. All right, folks, going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Michael Walzer. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program Michael Walzer. He is the retired editor of Dissent magazine, also a retired professor from the Advanced Study Institute for Advanced Study, sorry, in Princeton, New Jersey. Welcome to the program, Michael.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, I really, I want to start, obviously, with the title of your piece, but it really, in many ways, addresses what has been a dilemma I've been wrestling with over the past couple of weeks, and my audience is fully aware of it. We will get to that. But let's just start with the title, The Historical Task of the Left in the Present Period. That is, it's a bit of a callback.
Yes. yes, it's a phrase that that Stalin used, but before Stalin, it was used by people to whom we ought to be much more sympathetic. And it was the old left's way of addressing the question, what ought to be done. And it was a way of it involved some claim to historical significance, which I think we on the left should continue to make.
When we talk about historical task, I mean, what work is historical doing in that sentence?
Well, it is doing two things. First of all, it's evoking a past. We have a long history of addressing periodic capitalist crises, of trying to help people in trouble. So we have a long history, but it's also a way of saying this is important. This is what we need to do right now.
Put this into, from your perspective, who has been writing about this for decades, and by this I mean our politics and more broadly political philosophy. Put this moment into context as you see it.
Well, it's a moment of defeat. And of threat. The left has suffered a major loss of popular support, not only in the United States, where we were never all that strong, but across Europe, where we were sometimes the government. Every center left, every near left party in the world is in trouble right now. We have lost support among working people, and we have failed to make up for that loss among professional people or among minorities and new immigrants. I mean, we are struggling to conceive a new constituency, and that's one of the things that I was trying to address in the article in Dissent.
Yeah, and I want to get to the three historical tasks that you lay out, but also for us, just so that we can enter this. When you say left, I mean, give me a sense of what we're talking about what you're talking about when you say the left has lost here. I mean, good.
Well, I am a part of what I think of as the social democratic left, democratic socialist left, the left that Bernie Sanders tried to speak for in the Democratic primary campaign, the left that has shaped the modern welfare state in the period after World War II. There is a farther left, often critical of social democracy, but that's my left. And we are obviously in trouble right now, and on the and on the defensive, and there is a lot to defend, because the left has had, our left has had, significant achievements in the second half of the 20th century.
Let's talk about the three historical tasks that you say that we should be thinking about. The first is a leftist analysis and critique of what's going on. What do you mean by that?
Well, we're always in the history of social democracy, Marx stands at the beginning, and his analytic style has been pervasive in the way leftists think about the world. We are always looking for materialist explanations of whatever is going on. That's not always right. Sometimes there are ideological or even religious explanations, but right now we need to explain to ourselves what has happened to the classic working class, and what kind of a new political constituency can we construct in order to resist the attack on it's a very ambitious attack on everything, on healthcare, on every form of welfare, on every form of environmental protection, on immigrants and minorities. So we need to find a social base for our opposition, and that requires an analysis of the society we live in.
And we should say that, I mean, you mentioned there are proximate reasons for why Hillary Clinton lost this election, but I think the broader point is A, that this is something that we're seeing internationally, so it's not unique to this particular election. And even if James Comey, let's say, was the but-for here, or a multitude of other reasons were the but-for, it was a lot closer than it should have been, at least in the perspective, I think, of many of us. And you write, we need to attend to material, political, and psychological factors at work internationally. I mean, I imagine a lot of this is already there. It's just, it's coming to take it to the next step, right? I mean, we've been aware of wealth inequality. We have been aware of austerity practices, less so here, although to a certain extent, and more so abroad. We're certainly, at least on the left, aware of the financialization of our economy and the complete lack of accountability for people who are basically gambling with society, and it's a heads they win, tails we lose type of scenario. How do we take that to, I mean, what's the next step once that sort of, diagnosis has been made?
Yes, well, but first, part of the diagnosis has to be a recognition that the effects of the neoliberal economy globally, those effects are available not only to leftists like us, but also to right wing populists, and they also have a possible constituency created by global inequalities. And so that's why I stress we need to understand the psychological effects of austerity and the indifference to people in trouble that has been promoted by neoliberal economists and politicians. And we haven't. I'm not sure I understand why there were people who voted for Bernie in the primaries and probably voted for Trump in the election. That's something we have to get our heads around, because right-wing populism is a direct challenge to leftists who think of themselves as being on the side of the people.
Okay, and I guess so. Basically, it's one thing to see these dynamics at play. It's another to understand how they land when the rubber meets the road.
Yes, right.
All right. So let's you talk about the practical political work of the next few years. Tell us what's involved in that. Because this is, I mean, your number two and number three address the sort of the thing I've been worrying about is how do you and can you both push back on right-wing neoliberal policies? Are the strategies and tactics that you use in that, do they then become, do they then in some way enhance the chances of an assault on our constitutional democracy? I mean, how do you both, like, not just how do you chew gum and walk at the same time, but does chewing gum actually make it even that much harder to walk?
Okay, that's not an image I have immediate recognition of, but you're right. This is a we have two tasks in the next years, and they may not be entirely compatible, because we need to frame a left response to Trumpism and to the far right Republican Party, the new Republican Party, which is much farther to the right than the old Republican Party was. So we need to frame a specifically left response. And what I mean by that is that when we defend Obamacare, we should do it in a way that points to a better healthcare system than Obamacare. Our critique shouldn't just be a defense of the status quo. It should also be a critique of the status quo, even while we are defending what has been achieved. And at the same time, we are speaking in our own language as leftists, we have to work with anybody who is prepared to defend constitutional liberty, because I think that is going to come under attack in the next 4 years. And we need to find allies, and there are liberal and conservative people committed to the U.S. Constitution and to the civil liberties and civil rights that it guarantees. So we need to work with them at the same time as we are elaborating a specific left position. We need to build on the Bernie Sanders campaign, Black Lives Matter, the minimum wage campaign, whatever is left of Occupy. We need to build on all of that in a specifically left way, and at the same time, we need to cooperate with anyone who is prepared to defend constitutional liberty.
I guess my fear is that these are not these two tasks are not just incompatible, but they have an inverse proportion to them in terms of their efficacy. That in attempting for instance, let's just take the Obamacare situation, right? I mean, it's very hard right at this moment to tell where Trump is in relationship to the Republicans, and even where the Republicans themselves are, because I think they're finding out that this is the classic dog chasing the car and banging into it on some level. But for the sake of this, if Donald Trump, if there can be a cleave between Donald Trump and the Republicans, Whereas, you know, where Bernie Sanders gets up there and says, like, you know, I agree with Donald Trump. There's a problem with Obamacare. Let's just, you know, Medicare for all. This was to sort of open up this divide. I don't know where this lands, but this creates some type of cleave between Trump and the Republicans in Congress. They don't end up repealing Obamacare. Trump becomes far more popular, and the Republicans, because he's willing to blame them, at least in this level. And suddenly we're looking at a guy who still probably has the agenda of attacking constitutional democracy. I don't know if he would phrase it that way, but who's now at 60% popularity. I mean,
Right. That is exactly the dilemma I was trying to describe when I said that that right wing populists can also exploit the current situation, and Trump's populism may bring him into conflicts with the Republican Party as it is now. The Republican Party as the representative of neoliberalism in extremity, and that's a conflict. There will then be tactical decisions for us as to how we relate to that conflict. And you're right; those tactical decisions are going to be fraught. Difficult, and I have very little sense of where Trump actually stands and how much of a president he's going to be, and how much he's just going to allow congressional Republicans or his vice president to shape the program of the next 4 years. If there are internal conflicts, we will look for ways of exploiting them, and there will be dangers in that. But that's also a reason for sustaining on the side, so to speak, a consistently left position, which is independent of the tactics that we adopt. If opportunities arise to adopt them.
And so our task is both to promote a leftist vision and to accept the fact there may be times where we're supportive of David Frum, I mean, for lack of a better example, or for that matter, I don't know. I mean, Al Frum, any of the Frums, one question that has been hard for me to answer for my listeners is, how do we as people who are are watching this, how do we get involved when we don't have any political leaders who have any ability to execute anything, any legislation, any executive order? I mean, who are seemingly, at least, without any institutional power?
Well, I, for speaking from an American version of social democracy, that's been our problem for a very long time. But right now, I think there are important opportunities at the local level for left liberal activism in cities that are declaring themselves safe havens for immigrants. In state governments, the few states that are controlled by the Democrats, where there seems to be a renewed oppositional fervor, I think we have to work wherever we are. We're going to have to defend public schools, and that is always in America a local politics. So I would look for activism at every level, and especially the lower levels of American government. I remember back in the 60s when I helped to organize a group called the Cambridge Neighborhood Committee on Vietnam in Cambridge, Massachusetts, an anti-war group. In those days, there was actually a local branch of the Democratic Party in Cambridge, and we were able to capture it and send a delegate to the convention. I don't know that that kind of local politics still exists in many places, but it would be a good idea to revive branch politics, union branches and party branches, where people can become active. And I do think we have to be active in the Democratic Party. I'm not at this moment sympathetic to third party efforts, which are only likely to distract us from the battles we have to fight.
Do you ever envision a time for third party politics? I mean, what in other words, let me rephrase that. What would be the context in which that work would not be a distraction or counterproductive?
Well, it would have to be a time when one of the major parties, for us it would be the Democratic Party, had fractured in ways that that allowed us to constitute a party to the left, which could take over significant parts of the Democratic Party, the way the Republicans in the 1850s took over much of the old Whig organization and constituencies. I don't see that happening anytime soon. A year ago, it looked more like the Republican Party was going to fracture, and there might be opportunities for people on the farther right. But right now, our work should be in the Democratic Party.
Well,
and Bernie's entrance into the Democratic Party, he'd been out of it all his life, but his entrance into the primary showed where the fight has to go.
And the interesting thing is he's sort of emerging as the almost the sole Democratic leader as someone who is not actually a Democrat.
Right. Right. But there are others.
Right.
There is Elizabeth Warren. There is, what's his name, the Senator Brown from
Sherrod
Ohio.
Brown, yes.
And there are others that I hope will step up.
Well, Michael Walzer, the piece is in Dissent Magazine. We will put a link to it at majority.fm. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, folks. There it is. It's a great piece. And, you know, this is a conversation I feel like to a certain extent we keep having. There's a certain amount of redundancy in this conversation that we're having. And so I want you to know I am aware of that. And to some extent, to all extents, it's by design. We're still watching stuff shape out, and I think, you know, getting clarity on what comes next and what we can all do. Yesterday in the fun half, I got asked a question about what do I suggest to people, or how am I telling people to exercise their power? And it is still something that I'm, you know, trying to figure out in this. In a scenario where we have so little we have so little people that we can put leverage on who have institutional power or significant institutional power. Several people emailed with suggestions. A lot of people are suggesting that indivisible.org. Is that what it is? Indivisible.org? I've lost the email in front of me. But we actually sent out that document that is available at indivisible.org 3 or 4 weeks ago in our email blast. I don't think at that time it had been named. It was just a group of former staffers. It is not indivisible.org. What is it?
It's indivisibleguide.com.
Indivisible guide.
We'll put a link to it on the website.
All right. So it's indivisibleguide.com. And like I say, we sent a link to the document that became that, I guess, in our email from a couple of weeks ago. But you can get it, go directly to indivisibleguide.com. Just gives you suggestions. There is definitely value in calling congressional offices, even of Republicans and of Democrats. I mean, certainly, you know, if you're Jimmy Riefercake and you're up in Maine, there's going to be a lot of occasion for you to call your senator and call her a hypocrite, but also tell her to do the right thing. There, if your senator is up for re-election in the coming in 2018, good time to call them and put pressure on them. And, you know, also whether you're online, you get into a fight online, you know, you have a notion of principles you want to project and an awareness of allies that you may not be terribly excited about, but at least in that context of constitutional democracy, in terms of fighting like an authoritarian threat, just have that awareness. I mean, this is definitely one of those times where you need to be more than ready for an occasion that may not come up for a while. Does that make sense? Preparedness. And then other people have suggested, you know, things that we've suggested for a long time. Join a union. Go down to your local Democrat. Somebody, and I'm trying to find the email. I usually go through my emails in one big chunk because we get so many. But someone had said that their local Democratic Party, like something like 60% of the seats on the local Democratic Party were empty. And so people could just walk down there and basically become a Democratic Party operative. And, you know, who cares what your title is or whatnot. But I mean, if you can... 60% is empty. You and your friends could take it over, right? And
it's very, very easy to
do. Oh, here it is.
On the local level.
Yeah, Nick writes in. Here's a whole county that's 61% vacancy in its damn county. Let's see. Now, I don't know what county this is. It doesn't say. I've got the list. He didn't tell me where it's from, but 61%. Ashford Road, 10th Street, I don't know. Whitensville, maybe this is, I don't know where it is. But check out your county Democratic organizations. Just get involved. Start talking to people. If you're in a place with strong teachers unions, go and talk to your, and you have kids who go to public schools, talk to a couple of your teachers. Find out who the union rep is. What can I do to help? I mean, those type of things that don't, you know, everything's going to be a bank shot here, folks, until the day that it shows up and it turns out like it's not a bank shot. This is like, you know, that time in the game of Risk where you just simply head off the pass and you just keep building your numbers down in New Zealand. I don't know if you guys play Risk at all.
No. But I got the point.
There's only one outlet, and there's like four or five like little countries there, and you keep building. Then you.
One of my favorite parts of the interview actually was when you were explaining something, the gum and walking extended metaphor version to Professor Walzer, and he was just like, I'm not terribly familiar with that image, but I kind of get what you're saying, young man.
Well, I mean,
how did that feel actually? He was in terms of
made me feel young.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You were able to do an interview where you could be conceivably called young man.
There you go.
That was
going to be the key.
That was in the back of my mind.
Exclusive emeritus interviews from now on on this program.
Well, that's a very inquisitive point you have there.
There you go. The majority part.
Like, oh, Professor Walzer, what if you're chewing gum, but you have another stick of gum, and you want that, but you're walking, and it's raining outside, so then it might hurt the other gum because you could bite your lip.
I think you
got to
bring in
saying
a couple of more of like things like,
a little more
I've got my PlayStation handheld device.
my handheld device, and then my daughter's calling me, and I can't get any goddamn free time. Oh, that was a digression. I'm sorry.
Last night. Oh, I don't want to get into it.
Yeah, it's okay.
My neighbor came over, and he's like, how do you get anything done? I have no idea. Like, you know, because my kids they won't go to bed.
Yeah.
They will not go to bed.
And you got a no bed crew.
So I come home. I got to make them dinner. It's a good dinner. Blue Apron.
Call back.
But Saul didn't nap. He's supposed to go to sleep immediately. Why are you going to sit there?
Saul's a high energy kid.
Oh my God. He's easier than Milo was. Jesus. All right, folks, look. The point is, become a member of the Majority Report. We will have all emeritus interviews from now on. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Become a member today. You want to give a gift of the Majority Report? Go to majoritygift.com. Like I say, give your friends and family a month of the Majority Report. You can give them 2 months. Give them up to 12 months. Send it to your kid. JustCoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Yeah, only you want to help? Only support companies like Just Coffee. Why are you giving Starbucks your money? If you take the coffee home, I mean, I understand. If you go to a coffee place, sometimes you don't have time to brew your own coffee or during the day, whatever it is. But at the very least, try justcoffee.coop. Free shipping, coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Buy the Majority Report blend. People love that blend. But there's a bunch of other blends. Also, go listen to Two Dope Boys. Included the origin story of Nation of Islam Obama. So
that was on Tuesday, yeah.
People want to find out the Nation of Islam Obama character's origins. Go to Two Dope Boys.
And also in how Waz and I became friends. It's a good episode. That's like the most crossover episode of any we've done.
It's like, I watched something like that recently where Supergirl showed up on The Flash, who then showed up on Green Arrow, who then showed up on like some type of like Super Friends show.
Well, Waz is the bridge between the two shows, for sure. He's sort of equally at home in the Majority Report and Two Dope Boys in a Podcast universes. But we became friends because of a 5% Nation joke that I did on this show. And he said he's never, you'll listen to it, but he never reached out to anybody before on, because he's a host too. He's at ESPN True Hoop. And he's like, I listen to a lot of people. I've never reached out to anybody ever. But when I heard that joke, and he loved the fact too that you thought it was funny, but clearly had no idea what the reference was.
Right.
And he's like, a 5% Nation joke on a limp wrist, liberal, lefty complaint fest. That's just the best.
There you go.
And we went
That's
from
what
there.
We try and do.
a fun episode.
Limp wrist, the lefty with 5% jokes.
Should have said that on mic.
Complaining.
My wrist
about
hurts.
Wrist.
Well, no, because I did severely injure my wrist.
All right. I mean,
it's limp.
Typical Cedar sure. compassion.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Head into the fun app, 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the number. See you there.